Welcome to the Forum on the Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 25th of March, recording at 8:32 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. And I think this is the last recording at Greenwich Mean Time as we move on to British Summertime next week. Okay, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's have a quick review of the week. Stock markets, it's been a good week, moving steadily higher, and that includes today, where Asia had a good day, particularly India, up over 2.5%. Europe was mostly steady, as was the US, Brazil. Long-dated government bond prices generally slipped this week. The dollar was weak, but began to steady a little bit yesterday and had a reasonable bounce here today, particularly against the euro and sterling. The precious metals were mostly firm, but encountered some profit-taking yesterday and today as the dollar steadied. But before that, silver had surged to a new high, and gold just managed to touch a new high. Aluminium has been strong again among industrial metals. Copper has been quite steady. Crude oil firmed. But particularly the WTI, although it's backed off here a little bit, that's unchanged today. 105.70, it's just below the high earlier in the month. And the Brent's just around the 115 level. And in soft commodities, the grain and bean complex has firmed up a fair amount. Cotton's quietly steady. Those are the main. Orange juice weaker, cocoa weaker, sugar weaker, coffee steady. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, stock markets have adjusted rather well, I think, to the shocks that we had seen earlier on. And of course, the often mentioned by me triple waterfall, or the three black swans, as I variously called it, starting with the spike, a moderate spike in the price of crude oil in response to the Middle East uprisings. And then, of course, the horrific tragedy in Japan with that tsunami, and then the reactor problems at Fukushima. And, of course, none of these situations have really been resolved. We've got a civil war going on in Libya with Western powers, for the most part, moving in to even the odds out. And here, by shooting up some of Gaddafi's military apparatus, unfortunately, the Japanese reactor situation has yet to be contained, and this looks like a very slow and lengthy process. So there's plenty of uncertainty around, but markets have responded favorably here this week, and that suggests that there might be some additional liquidity sloshing around. Has that come from Japan? Quite possibly. And we have also, we are of course also still seeing the quantitative easing, QE2, from the US Fed, and I suspect that's been perhaps an even bigger factor over the last week. Okay, so where do we go overall? Well, I like the Fuller Money themes. But first, I'm going to say that everything that I'm going to say is all predicated here. Just about everything I'm going to say is predicated on oil not spiking sharply higher again. And so let's look at that for a moment. Could the oil price spike higher in the short to medium term? Well, yes, it could. I would guess that that's less than a 50-50 possibility. Could it nudge a little higher, just as people talk about potential withdrawals of development plans for some of the nuclear power installations that were being not the ones that were being built, but the ones that were also in the planning stage? Well, yes, oil could move a little bit higher. I don't think it's doing it so much on demand, but it could do it in a bit of a speculative play here with investment funds moving into those crude oil trackers. I'm against those, incidentally, as you probably know, and really largely because these are never meant to be asset classes. If you want to participate in oil, then I think the way to do that is via the oil shares. I do trade the oil futures from time to time, but when commodity prices start to become a problem, I don't want to be participating. And certainly, we know that food prices have been a problem globally, not least in leading to the unrest in the Middle East. And we know that higher oil prices can be a major problem overall. But I digress. Let's say that there's a risk, at least a 50-50 possibility that oil could move a little bit higher. I don't think it's likely to get another big spike to the upside. And I think possibly because everybody, including those who are buying the trackers, knows that that would be bad for the global economy overall. We do not have a shortage of oil here, although the marginal supply is tight with Libya's production down. But the big story for most of this year has been the U.S. Surplus of oil, and that has kept the helped to keep the WTI price lower. But the bigger story is that one of the key factors behind that surplus of oil, it's not just all about storage at Cushing, but why is there so much oil there? Well, it's been coming in from Canada at a time when the U.S. has been using more and more natural gas. And that's the really big story. And that natural gas is coming mainly from U.S.-produced shale gas. And that's going to be a huge story for the future. The shale gas expertise has already spread beyond the USA. And over the next decade, we're going to hear a great deal more about it. And there is a lot of shale gas out there that can be tapped. And that includes Europe. Poland has an enormous amount of shale gas. So does the Ukraine. China has a lot of it, but it's spread. There's plenty of it around the globe. That's the point I want to make, rather than naming all the individual countries. And then there's every bit as big and perhaps even a bigger story now welling up. Ever since I was a little boy, I've known about shale oil, but it was something that was really inaccessible at any kind of acceptable cost, both in terms of capital and also for the economy. But now, shale oil is being produced economically, and no more with apparently no greater risks than with the shale gas in the United States. And that technology is going to spread wide and far over the next 10 to 20 years. So when we talk about energy and the what I still find is an uncomfortably a high risk, probably less than 50-50, but that's uncomfortably high, that oil could move to the upside, possibly even spike. That, I think, is a risk that will be with us for the next few years, but it's a risk that's going to fade with time. And incidentally, any hold on nuclear power development aggravates risks to the global economy through higher prices for crude oil, coal, and natural gas. So I think we're going to have a delicately balanced energy situation here, where there are risks in not only the short term but in the medium term for the next few years. But I am very optimistic that come, say, 2025, well, I told you this is the big picture long-term outlook. Come 2025, or by 2025, so it may well come sooner, depending on how quickly the shale gas and shale oil are developed outside of the United States. I think we're going to be awash in energy, and I have said on a number of occasions, will continue to say, that I think that the price of crude oil will be lower in real terms than the Brent price today. So if you want a benchmark for that, that's Brent at $115 today. I think it will be lower in real, that is, inflation-adjusted terms, by 2025. Now, if that forecast is correct, and I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be, we know that the demand for energy is going to grow steadily. The only thing that would prevent that from happening would be if there was some sort of exogenous shock to the global economy of biblical proportions. Now, that's kind of doomsday rock territory, and I'm not in the business of forecasting anything like that. I'm not talking about a few sort of more human-sized black swans, in other words, or people-sized black swans, such as we've seen with earthquakes and nuclear power reactor problems and the uprisings in the Middle East. Those have a short-term effect for the most part, but so I think that again, the more we move towards the back end of this decade, the more secure our energy future will look. Now, again, I hope that nuclear plays a big part in that. I think that it really should. It's but you know my arguments about that. I've been putting them in comment of the day on a daily basis. But there is absolutely no doubt that even if nuclear programs are curtailed, and some of them will be, that the additional energy available from shale gas and shale oil will prevent any kind of energy crunch. And I think it's also fantastically bullish in terms of the global supercycle products prospects. A global supercycle is something that we do expect here at Fuller Money in terms of GDP growth. We've been talking about a supercycle for commodities for the last decade, really led by industrial commodities because weather's the big variable with agricultural commodities. But inevitably, if you get a supercycle in industrial commodities, that can only occur if there is a strong, steady growth, putting a bit of a strain on the supply side of commodities, and that requires a GDP supercycle. So I think that, again, that will be led by the Asian engine, including Japan. That's where I want to be invested, including, I said including Japan. Well, it's Friday, folks, and I was in here early this morning. But it will be led by that growth super cycle will be led by Asia, including India. And I think it will be big, and that's the where I want to have a lot of my investments concentrated. Fortunately, I do. Now, what are other implications here? Moving on from what, well, I'm going to reiterate just in terms of stock markets. Fuller money themes. I like the resources. still the industrial resources. So that includes the big miners, the oil companies. They're certainly going to be very busy with all the shale oil and shale gas to develop. I'm not so keen on the renewables. The nuclear power industry has, which I certainly liked up until this Japan tragedy, but I think this is a big medium-term setback for the nuclear power industry. But it will come back again, and it'll come back stronger and safer. And we need to remember that the reactors that got in trouble were built in the 60s and 70s. Among fuller money themes, we like those South American, Central and South American resources markets. We like the resources sector generally, as I've said. We like global infrastructure. We like technology, which plays an increasingly important role. We like dividend aristocrats, high yielding equities. With particularly ones that have a global reach in terms of their earnings capacity. Put that another way around, we like big multinational Western companies that are leveraged to the global economy. The United States has most of them, Germany has a number of them, the UK has a few of them, but all of these companies that are big global players, leaders in their industries, and leveraged to the faster growing regions of the globe. I think those are interesting investments. They've been interesting investments in recent years, and I think they will remain so. And we will have to worry about an interest rate, a higher interest rate caused bear market. Somewhere down the road in the next few years. I don't need to say any more about that. I don't think at this time. It's not something that's going to happen this year, in my opinion. Let's wait till we get to next year and see how that actually looks. But most bull markets, and this is a good cyclical bull market here, most of them are eventually killed off by central banks, as you know, as they tighten interest rates. But I think there should be plenty of additional upside before that next happens. Now, long-dated government bonds, I maintain that bond yields are in a bottoming out and base building process prior to moving higher. That means that bonds are entering a secular bear market, which will see yields ranging higher over the next decade or two, and also see prices coming down. Don't expect the move to be swift. It'll be slow, mostly punctuated by ranging. For one thing, there are limits to how much many of these major bond market limits to how much the yields can go up here in the short term, while real interest rates are still so low. But again, that is on out there on the horizon somewhere. Could it be in 2012 or 2013? Yes, but this is not the time to be worrying or planning for that. I think this choppy ranging phase that we've been seeing here in recent months, that was quite predictable and predicted, that held things up, but the Asian markets look increasingly as if they have negotiated another successful mean reversion test and are pushing higher once again. I'm cautious on those forecasts because a mean reversion to test the rising MAs is always a bit unnerving for all of us. And we've seen the markets steady, and I said they have been pushing up. That's encouraging. It all looks good in terms of the overall cyclical upward trend, but you never get confirmation until well after the event. And the thing to look for is watch for some of these markets to start pushing to new all-time highs or new highs for the year at least, and holding it. Watch for markets such as Indonesia and Thailand to be among that list. Malaysia, why those three? Because they benefit from the manufacturing, light manufacturing and assembly growth, but they also benefit as commodity producers, so that puts them to the fore more often than not. But watch also for an improved performance by China, which has been range bound for such a long time. That may take a little longer, but the patterns certainly show considerable medium term upside potential. I mentioned that India had had a good couple of days here. That's quite heartening. And watch for that to play a leading role, certainly over the medium term, if not over the short term. And what else to mention here? In terms of commodity plays, well, this is a commodity super cycle. It ran ahead a little bit too fast, a little bit too much speculation. I'm hoping that that quiets down a bit, particularly regarding food prices and also oil supplies. Certainly, any resolution of the Libyan situation, which involved the Gaddafi family leaving, would, I think, help to pull crude oil back a little bit. I expect that to happen, but hopefully it happens sooner rather than later. And I hope that some sort of nonviolent resolution can occur in some of these other Middle Eastern countries. Bahrain, not least, can be achieved peacefully here. That doesn't completely destabilize the place, but does cater to the needs of the majority. So stability there would play stability in the Middle East would pay dividends in terms of overall global stock market performance. But in talking about these commodities, it's going to take a little more time before the crops come through to push the grain and bean complex lower. But that will hopefully happen. I was pleased to see that Evelyn Browning Garris is expecting better crops to come through as the La Nina subsides. That would be a favorable development. We need to remember that we still have negative real interest rates, so markets can cope with some further hikes there. It's not a bad picture here overall, but the immediate environment is still a little bit choppy. What about currencies? I think the most interesting play is the yen here, and I've been a stale bull, in other words, losing money on this by shorting the yen while watching the Japanese talk about how or most of them at any rate, talking about how the too strong yen was a major problem for their exporters, and it is. We did get the multilateral intervention, was it last week or early this week, just to, I think it was last week, to weaken the yen. That has never failed to prove successful in the past, but it can sometimes take time. And I think there is a little bit of a power struggle there between in Japan between the BOJ and the government. But certainly I think Japan needs a weaker yen. Most of Japan seems to want a weaker yen. The other G7 countries are not opposed to that and have actually been assisting somewhat. Now all they have to do is to improve the trend and get the currency speculators participating as well. And something that a comment of mine that veteran subscribers will recall is that happiness in Forex is having the central banks and the market trend on your side. And in terms of yen shorts, and I'm playing this with yen shorts against the US dollar, that we need to see a little bit more of a move to the upside here to turn all the moving average systems around and get the speculative industry very much on board. I think that will actually happen, and I think that short yen may be one of the better trades here for the remainder of the year. I wouldn't be too bearish on the US dollar at this stage because the US economy is doing well enough, led by its very strong multinational corporate sector. And its advantage in terms of the energy that it's now actually producing. And on that note, folks, I don't want to let this run on too long, so I'll just say it's been an interesting week, not at all a bad week, particularly for some of our long-term investments. Have a great weekend.